This talk is from the teaching ministry at New Heights Church, Vancouver, Washington, where we seek to bring help, hope, and home to hurting people through Jesus Christ.
When I was finished college, I went to work on a maintenance crew at a private school. Loved the work, worked with a variety of different guys, but two stand out, John Campbell and Ahmed Ali Wabi. And one day, Ahmed, John, and myself, we were out working on the track. Track season was coming up, it was beginning to be the fall, and so we're out there sweeping and cleaning, and John and Ahmed said, "Bill, we want to race." I'm like, what do you mean? They wanted to run around the track, 400 meters. At first, I thought they were kidding. Then I thought they were crazy, because it's hot, end of a hard work day. We're in overalls, jeans, work boots, not exactly Nike apparel, just do it, you know? I mean, it's like, you gotta be kidding me, you guys are nuts. They wouldn't give it up. And eventually Ahmed looked at me, I remember just like it was yesterday, he said, "Bill, are you afraid?" Okay, when you put it that way, no, let's race. So we got up to the starting line, John gave the command, and we took off. And when I say took off, I mean John and Ahmed blew out of those blocks so fast, I couldn't believe it. It was like, oh my word, these guys are way better than I thought they were. And I settled into a jog because I knew I couldn't maintain that pace, and I kind of prepared myself for my eventual humiliation at the finish line when they'd be waiting there a half hour for me to get done. And so we kept running, and about the halfway mark for me, I noticed Ahmed was really slowing down. You know how you can tell somebody's posture, whether they're really struggling? He looked like he had a 50-pound bag of concrete on his shoulders. And as I went past him, he was just sweating like a pig and sucking air to beat the band. I mean, I thought, this guy's going to have a vapor lock right here. But I didn't care because I was still on my way. So I left him next quarter of a turn, caught up to John. John was in slow motion by that time. And really, I could have stopped running and walked the rest of the way because neither of them finished the race. They were both just bent over, just utterly exhausted. Why? Well, because they had no stamina or endurance. I didn't have much more than they did, but they didn't have stamina and endurance. They had not prepared their bodies, conditioned themselves, trained to do that kind of a run. Even though it was a short run, for us it would have been an endurance run, and they ran it like it was a sprint. I think Christians make that mistake regularly. We think the Christian life is a sprint. It's all about, I got to get out there, and I got to go fast, and I got to run really hard. And we end up not being able to last. We start out on the race because Jesus is so captivating to us. We love what God's doing in our lives. We see God at work. His word begins to take on new meaning for us. We begin to change. Old habits get shaken. We can see ourselves becoming that new creation that Christ talked about. And then all of a sudden, we forget that Jesus says to his disciples, in this world, you will have trouble. And hardships come, and they start to take a bite out of us. And friends let us down and betray us. And we start to feel and start to wonder, is God still around? Does he care? I mean, where did God go? I thought he was here, and our faith begins to waver, and pretty soon we find ourselves, figuratively speaking, bent over on the racetrack of life, sucking air and wondering, I don't think I can make it. I want to quit. I'm done. And I guarantee you, some here today feel exactly that way right now. I get it. I felt that way, and what's interesting is the book of Hebrews was written to a group of people who were in that same situation. They were Jewish people, had come to faith in Christ. They had started strong and started fast. They had seen signs and wonders, their faith was coming alive, and they were just thrilled with what God was doing. And they faced persecution. And all of a sudden, the newness kind of wore off. It was extended persecution for their faith. They suffered hardship and loss of property, loss of loved ones, loss of economic livelihood, loss of security and stability. And they began to look back on their old days in the Jewish faith and say, man, I long for the good old days when we were just Jewish. And where did God go? And they wanted out, and they wanted out now. They were in essence saying, I quit. And the author of Hebrews spends the bulk of the book of Hebrews helping them see that Jesus is superior to any of their old beliefs. And he helps them understand why they need to endure and not give up. And in Hebrews chapter 11, he goes through a list of Old Testament heroes, people who demonstrated extraordinary faith in the face of opposition and difficulty and persecution and suffering. And by the way, never saw the fulfillment of the promises of the Old Testament in the Messiah, right? These people had faith in God, even though the fulfillment of those promises never came about in their lifetime. They still made it to the end of that race with faith in God. And then in Hebrews chapter 12, we read some really amazing words in the first three verses, and I want to read those for us today. So why don't you stand with me, please, and I'll read Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 to 3. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Thank you. You can be seated. Our current series is helping us to build a foundation for the Christian life. It's designed to show us five steps we can do that'll help us to be more capable of following Jesus. And each one of these activities is represented in the series by a word. You may remember week number one was connect. That is, every day we need to find a simple way to connect with God. As we build the connection with God, we'll also find out that some things are not right in our lives. And it's a good thing to ask why, what's going on, and to ask God to search our hearts. That's inspect. That's the second step. And then last week, Mark took us to the place where we select. That is, we choose behaviors that energize us and that bring us alive spiritually and to God. And today, then, it's kind of the opposite side of that same coin of last week. It's reject. We got to surrender things that won't and don't work. Last week was about habits or activities or attitudes that we can take on to help us become better followers of Jesus and be all we need to be in Christ. Today it's, yeah, but you know, if you're going to bring some things on, some things have got to go in order to really be able to run the race effectively. And so as we look at this brief passage, I just want to show you kind of the flow of the passage, the structure that's built into the passage. Three different times in these three verses, he says this phrase, let us. You'll see it in verse 1, let us throw off. If you're taking notes, just circle let us in verse 1 there. And then again in verse 1 toward the end, let us run with endurance. And then one more time in verse 2 at the beginning, let us fix our eyes. So you've got let us throw off, let us run, let us fix our eyes. And those are the three points of the outline, because that's the structure of this passage. And I'm going to give you the outline now so we can not have to worry about it. It's the preparation for the race. That's the first let us throw off. And then participation in the race. That's let us run. And then the person of the race. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus. So first, the preparation for the race. That's where you got to start, right? In verse 1, he says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. I mentioned a minute ago that in the chapter 11 of this book, he's talked about all kinds of Old Testament heroes of the faith. They're kind of the faith hall of fame. People like Noah and Abraham and Moses and a woman, Rahab, all great exercise of faith on their part. They didn't know where God was. They had an idea where God was leading them, but they couldn't see it yet. It was all done by faith, and they followed God that way their whole lives through suffering, confusion, hardship, even death. And here the author talks about these heroes of the faith as a great cloud of witnesses. And when he does that, he's picturing the idea he has in his mind is one that we can relate to. It's an athletic stadium, I think. Running track down on the field, and we're running on that track. If we're running the race for Jesus, we're on that track right now. And in the stands, according to this writer, are all these Old Testament heroes of the faith. They're all there, and it's not so much that they are watching us, but he's telling us that we ought to be looking to them. We need to let their stories of faith inspire us to greater and greater faith. We need to let their example and model urge us on to the race that God has for us. Because they were faithful, they can inspire us to be faithful too. That's the first part of preparation for the race, remembering those who've gone before us, because you can't run a race without preparing. And that's also true, maybe even more true, of the spiritual race. For the last couple of weeks, Mark has stood up here and talked about his various races and events that he's been in. The selection in my life is a little more limited. I've only had really one race that I can remember as an adult, and a long ride. About 14 years ago, a good friend of mine named Tom said, "Hey, I want to do the Seattle to Portland ride. It's not really a race, it's a ride, but it's a long one." I said, "How long is that?" "Well, it's 206 miles. "In a day? You're kidding. I mean, I thought it was ludicrous. I'd never ridden anywhere near that long before." Now, imagine, the race took place on July 9th, 2003. Imagine if he had come to me on July 8th and said, "Hey, did you hear the Seattle to Portland ride's happening tomorrow? How about if we do it?" What do you think the result would have been? Not real good, huh? It would not have been a pretty sight at all. I mean, they probably would have found our dead bodies somewhere around mile 20 or 30. And fortunately, we didn't do that. You know what we did? We trained. We prepared. Because you have to. You can't do something like that without getting ready. So we started eating differently. We did training rides three times a week, a long ride, 60, 70, 80 miles, then a medium-sized length ride, 40, 50, and then a short ride, 20 miles, every week. Every single week before the race happened, months in advance, we were riding and putting that kind of mileage in. It was funny to me in the beginning because Tom, my friend, was very, very frustrated because no matter how hard he tried, he could not keep up with me. I get that all the time. I didn't ask for greatness. It was thrust upon me. It's a burden that I bear. And so actually, that's not true at all, because what happened was he was riding a sort of a modified mountain bike. The frame was much heavier. The wheels, the tires were not really good for road riding. And when he finally upgraded and changed his bike to a road bike, I could barely keep up with him. So if you're going to do a long ride like that or run a race, you have to prepare. You have to train. You have to get rid of whatever weight you can. And if you're riding to the corner store on your bike, it doesn't matter how heavy your bike is. You can have a bike that's as heavy as a Cadillac Escalade. Who cares? But when you're riding and running a race, you got to get rid of any kind of weight that you possibly can. And so we're told, throw off everything that holds us back. The word there is used of taking off clothing or setting something aside. He says, the things that hinder us. He's talking about a weight, a burden, an encumbrance. And I think he's talking about two different kinds of weights or encumbrances here. One is non-sinful, and the other is the sin. He calls it the sin that easily entangles us. So the first one, I'm just calling weights. Non-sinful things that hold us back. The idea here is that if we're going to run the race that God has given us to run and live a life of faith and following Jesus, you have to strip down spiritually. I mean, we know that intuitively when we race physically, don't we? If you get in a race, you know you don't want to wear baggy sweatsuits or parkas, gloves, boots. Well, the same thing is here too, true in the spiritual race. Too much weight holds you back, so get rid of it. If you're running to win or running to stay in the race, what needs to go? Well, anything that holds us back, that makes it difficult for you to run and run well and run for a long time. That makes it harder for you to have faith and follow God. But here I'm talking about things that are not sinful in and of themselves. It may be different for every one of us. I don't know that I can tell you what's a weight in your life, and I'm not sure you can tell me what's a weight in mine. It differs for everybody. So how would you know what a weight is? Start running and make the decision today to start living your life for Christ, to really giving yourself over to Christ and living your life for Him. And I guarantee you, when you start to run, you'll begin to figure out, this thing holds me back. It's not wrong. I'm not doing something sinful, but I'm going to get rid of it because I want to do the race the way that Christ wants me to race. He also says, though, we need to get rid of the sin. Not sin, he says the sin. And he describes the sin as one that easily entangles us. It's a sin that we constantly get tripped up by. It wraps itself around our feet, and it either slows us down or it drops us to the track. Which sin is it for you? I've almost never talked to a person who can't tell me what their most challenging sin is, the thing that just crops up all the time and keeps getting after them. It gets in the way all the time. What's it for you? Maybe it's lust or greed or envy or pride or the craving for control. You know what it is for me? And I've told you this before, and I think I've grown in this area, but it's still, I can get paralyzed by this. For me, it's the sin of fear. What if I make a mistake? What if I fail? What if people don't like what I've decided? Or worse yet, what if they don't like me? That can just rack me up and paralyze me if I'm not careful. So we have to prepare for the race. We get rid of the things that are holding us back, sinful and non-sinful, and then we run. We participate in the race. That's the second let us there. Participation in the race. And he says, let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. It's not enough to prepare. You have to do something. You have to get into the race. You've bought a treadmill before, or new workout clothing, or you got a new gym membership, whatever, health club membership, and you've realized pretty quickly those things are useless unless you actually do something with them. So it's not enough to just prepare. We have to get in the race. The word race, fascinating to me. In the Greek, it's the word agon, from which we get our word agony. Gives you a little bit of an idea of the nature of the race, doesn't it? When we race for Christ, it's going to be agonizing at times. It's going to be a struggle, a challenge. Ridding our lives of sin and encumbrance, that's a good thing to do, preparing for our race. But that's not the Christian life. Sometimes I think Christians get confused into thinking that the Christian life is sin management, just making sure I'm not sinning. That's not the race that Christ is inviting us into. God invites us into a race, an adventure with Him. And He says, let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. The word perseverance is a great word in Greek there. It's hupomeno, which means remain under. It pictures pressure coming down on us like that. And our tendency is to want to just slide out from underneath it. He says, don't. I mean, that's our standard operating procedure, isn't it? No, just remain under, stay there, endure, don't quit, keep going. That's what you have to do in order to race. Labor Day, I got to do one of my favorite things. I took my road bike, put it on the bike rack on the car, and drove over to the Springwater Corridor in Portland. Maybe you've heard of that before. It's an old railroad track that they've decommissioned and put a paved trail that goes from Selwood out to Boring. And I usually catch it about Foster Road trailhead, and I go from Foster Road out to Boring and back, and I just ride it as fast as I can, which is not really that impressive. But my wife, when I got home this time, she said, how was your ride? I said, it was terrific. She said, why? I said, man, I was passing all kinds of people. I was blowing by them, and nobody was passing me. She said, did they know they were racing? No. Maybe not. You know, you got people out there with strollers. But I blew by them, baby. Woo! Get out of my way. But that's the problem with a lot of us, I think, who are following Jesus. We forget that he's invited us into a race. Not a walk with the stroller, not a tiptoe through the tulips, but a race. And by the way, we're not against each other. We're not competing against other Christians. He's called us to a race to fulfill the life that God has given each one of us to live for him. So the writer of Hebrews says we're to run the race marked out for us. Does that mean there's a special and specific race that God's called you to and me to? Undoubtedly. None of our races are identical. Now, that doesn't mean they're completely and radically different, right? I mean, every single follower of Jesus has been called to learn how to live our lives out in such a way as to worship the Lord. We've been called to love our neighbor, serve the people around us, share our faith with those who don't know Christ. So will that look different for each one of us? Yes, I think absolutely so. Is it going to be entirely different? No, because we all serve the same Jesus. What I know is, as I said earlier, for some of you, the situations you're in right now make you feel like quitting. And you just think to yourself, I can't go on. And I can tell you from personal experience this. Many times, maybe not all the time, many times, if you don't quit, that's where the reward is. Sometimes you have no choice. But when you are able to not quit, that's where the reward is. That's what it takes. Napoleon Hill, not a Christian, but he has a great quote. I've used this time and again. He says, effort only releases its reward after a person refuses to quit. See, all the effort you make when you're still saying in your mind, I can quit, I can go, I can get out of here, I can run. As long as you have that in your mind, the effort you're doing isn't going to have the result you're looking for. When you finally say, I will not quit, I don't care what happens, I'm staying, then the effort makes all the difference in the world. Christian life is not a sprint. It's a marathon. It takes endurance. It's how do you develop that mindset? I mean, how do you develop that perspective on life, that it's not a sprint, it's not just running real hard for a short time, but long distance, you got to put it together for a long period of time. It's by looking to the person of the race, and that's the third section of this passage. The person of the race, and that starts in verse 2. He says, let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. We can prepare, we can run, and we can still miss the point. The point is, the author is saying, to run the race with Jesus. He's writing to people who are hung up on their old religious beliefs, and the entire book of Hebrews is this author saying to them, listen, going back to your old beliefs makes no sense because they're the thing that pointed to Jesus. He's the fulfillment of those. You can't go back. Jesus is superior to angels or to high priests or to any religious code. He's beyond compare. There's nothing else that you and I actually need other than Jesus. But until we find the person of the race, there's no good reason to prepare or participate in the race. Jesus, in him, we find the reason for the race and the resources for the race. In Jesus, we find the reason for the race and the resources for the race. Without him, whatever we're doing is just a bunch of religious activity, right? It makes us feel good, I think, maybe even think of ourselves more highly, but it isn't what Jesus is looking for. The race we need to run, we can't finish without Jesus. We have to fix our eyes on him. And the word fix there is a really unusual one. It doesn't just mean stare intently at something, you know, find an object and really look at it hard. It's a great word. It means to look away from everything else to this one thing. Isn't that a great concept? He says, look, fix your eyes on Jesus. That means take your eyes off everything else that tends to distract you and look at him. And by the way, that verb is in a tense there that would indicate you have to do it over and over again, because I don't know about you guys, but that's what happens to me. Regularly, I lose sight of Jesus. I get distracted and have to be reminded, whether by the word of God or a friend of mine or somebody else, my own conscience, that, oh man, I'm lost again. I'm looking at all these things. I've got to look away from to Jesus. looking at the wrong thing, having the wrong focus, or something that less central as the object of our focus can really lose the whole ball game. On May 6, 1954, Roger Bannister became the first man in history to run a sub-4-minute mile. 1954. 2 months later, John Landy beat that by 1.4 seconds, which is like an eternity in an event like that one. And then on August 7, 1954, the two were in a race together. And as they moved into the last lap, Landy held the lead, and it looked like he was going to win. What we didn't know is that in his mind, he had this question that was dogging him endlessly, and that was, where is Roger Bannister? He couldn't see him because he was looking at the finish line. As he got near the finish line, he turned around to look for Roger Bannister to see where he was, and Roger Bannister passed him and went on to win the race. John Landy said later to a Time magazine reporter, if I hadn't looked back, I would have won. Jesus needs to be the one on whom we fix our attention. And the reason he's so special, you can see from the credentials that he has, his spiritual credentials, his racing credentials, if you will. It says he's the author and perfecter of our faith. He's the original pioneer. He carved the pathway that all the rest of us are going to follow. And oh, by the way, he's also the one who made it possible for us to finish, because he finished. He completed his assignment from the Father. He could rightfully say on the cross, it is finished. Not I am finished, which is what we would have said if we were on the cross, but it is finished. I'm finishing the mission that my Father gave to me. It was done. It also means then that he has the power and the spiritual resources to help us finish the race. He alone can give us the motivation and energy to complete the race that God has given each one of us. Look at the rest of his spiritual resume in verse 2 there. I'm going to take it phrase by phrase, and I'm giving each one of those, I'm labeling it with a word that starts with the letter F. His focus. It says, who for the joy set before him endured the cross. Isn't that interesting? Jesus did not focus on the cross. He focused on what was beyond it, right? He didn't look at the cross. He looked beyond it. The joy set before him. What was that? Maybe it was completing the work the Father had given him, but certainly it was about reuniting us with the Father, right? Enabling mankind to be reconciled to God. It was bringing salvation to the ones he loves, you and me. I mean, that was the joy that kept Jesus working that direction. And eventually he made it possible for our sins to be forgiven and to be restored to God's family, which, by the way, is how you get in the race. So if you're saying, I don't know what race you're talking about, that's how you get in the race. You say to Jesus, I need the gift that came through your death on the cross for my sins. I want you to forgive my sins and run the race of life with me. He kept his eyes on that goal. And then we see his faithfulness. It says he endured the cross. It was a terrible thing to endure. Agony, suffering, torture. But really, the loss for Jesus, I think, physically was secondary. The real suffering for Jesus was that he became sin for us, which eventually caused him to cry out on the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? That was the torture Jesus had to endure. And yet he followed through to the end. He was fearless. Look at his fearlessness. It says he scorned its shame. Scorning something means you disregard it, don't pay attention to it. Jesus thought so little of the pain and shame of dying on the cross that he did not let it interfere with what he needed to do. And dying on the cross was very shameful, so horrible that the Romans who did this thing wouldn't execute their own citizens that way. So he endured it, he was fearless. You remember him praying in the garden to his Father? He said, Father, if there's any other way this thing can happen, if there's any other way than me dying on the cross, please, I beg you, take this cup from me. But how did he finish the prayer? Nevertheless, not my will, but yours. That's fearlessness. But we also get to see his finish. He sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. The race has an end. Isn't that a good thing? Yes, we endure. Yes, it's a marathon, but it has a finish line. Jesus came to his finish line. And so when we need to run and without growing weary and not giving up and make it to the finish line, he's the one we can count on. Jesus finished. And by the way, it's the tense of those verbs indicates that the result of his finishing carries on and on and on into eternity. Notice where he sat when he was done. The right hand of the throne of God. Nobody sits there but God. So Jesus was and is God, and because of that, he can come to our aid like nobody else, and he can bring courage and comfort, strength and guidance for the race that God has marked out for us. It says in verse 3, "Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men so that you will not grow weary and lose heart." Consider is a great word. It means take an accounting, sit down and reason, think it through, a careful analysis and assessment of Jesus. And when you'll see, what you'll do when you do that, you'll see how he endured great hostility and opposition from sinful people. And when we understand that, who he is and what he's done for us and what he can do for us, then we will not grow weary and lose heart. The only race I ever really participated in as an adult was a sprint triathlon. A sprint means it's baby steps. it's short distances. Distances that probably anybody could manage. It just would be a difference in how fast we do it. And so I'm preparing for that race, and my friend Neil is going to help me. And so he takes my road bike, and he did something I never even thought of doing. He started taking off everything that was extraneous. Reflectors, lights, fenders, all that stuff went away. Why? Well, because you're in a race. You don't want any more weight than you have to have. He took the brakes off. No, not really. I'm just kidding. I mean, he would have if I hadn't stopped him, because you don't need to stop, man. You just keep going. See, those things are fine if you're taking a ride, but they're no good if you're in a race. If you're in a race that God's given you to run, are you in it to win it? Because then if you are, you need to reject some things in your life in order to run the race and run with endurance. Some of the things we need to reject and surrender are not sinful in and of themselves. We surrender them not because they're sin, but because they keep us from running the race that God's given for us to run. What might that be for you? Maybe it's a relationship, a friendship. I'm not suggesting for a minute that we crudely and rudely reject a person, but we may need to step back from a relationship because it's not helping or healthy. Maybe it's your job that's become so all-consuming. Or it might be the internet or video games, Facebook. Are those things evil in and of themselves? Yes. No, I'm kidding about that. But they can become a problem, can't they? I mean, you can absorb so much time there that it takes away from what God's really given you to do. Maybe it's a habit of staying up late, which makes it hard to get up early, which makes it hard to get to some of those spiritual exercises that will strengthen us for the race. Maybe it's the kind of books you read. Or maybe it's a really cool hobby. I mean, a great hobby, and you love it. And it's a good thing. It's not bad. But it takes so much of you and energy and time that you decide, you know, I want to get in this race. I want to give it everything I've got. I want to last for a long time. So I'm going to shed that so I can do what Christ is calling me to do. These things are not sinful in and of themselves. So why worry? Well, because they hold us back. And we want to run this race and win and do what God has for us to do. So we prepare. We participate, we get in the race, and we focus on the person of the race. And let me pray to him. Jesus, I could probably use this talk about every other week, because I lose sight of the fact that we're in a race. If I think I'm just out for a walk, it changes everything about how I go about living. But if I think I'm in a race, we just know intuitively that if you're in a race and you're running a race somewhere, you're not going to wear a parka and boots. You want to get rid of that. Not because parkas and boots are sinful or bad, but man, they hold you back. You want to put everything into the race you can, and you want to last at running for a long time. So God, would you help us today to each make a careful assessment of our lives first, and determine, are there things that we need to shed? Do we need to reject something, surrender the things that aren't working, so we can run more freely and fully? And would you help us, please, to focus on the one who can give us a reason to run and the resources to run? And I want to pray in his name, amen.
Copyright New Heights Church. Contact us at info at newheights.org.